Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the GAP's fourth quarter 2021 and full year 2021 and 2022 outlook question and answer conference call. To ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I will now pass the floor to Mr. Marcelo Rivo, Head of Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the analyst Q&A session related with GAP's fourth quarter and full year 2021 results. I would like to thank you for joining us today. Early this morning, we released all relevant materials, and this time also included video presentations from all GAP's executive members, highlighting the key achievements during the year and covering the financial results. As such, this session is expected to be shorter as we will go straight to Q&A, where Andy and the remaining executive team will be available to take your questions. As usual, I would like to remind you that we will be making forward-looking statements that refer to estimates, and actual results may differ due to factors included on the cautionary statement presented at the beginning of the presentation we released this morning, which we advise you to read. Andy, do you want to say a few words before we start taking questions?
Thank you, Marcelo. Well, it's been one year since I started as CEO of GAP, and it's an exciting year. It's a year in which we have a new purpose. Let's regenerate the future together. As we look back on the year, we have a robust set of results. Despite some operational difficulties in those supplying us gas and LNG, some operational difficulties in our own refinery in Sines, and some operational difficulties battling with COVID in our non-operated position in upstream. We also have a very large working capital build, which masks, I think, the quality of our financial framework and position today. We have a distinctive investment opportunity, one that is grounded on growth. Growth of our core upstream business, which is extraordinarily cash generative, but also growth in our other renewable and new energy businesses. This gives us an overall decarbonization pace, which I think is distinctive. Also, given the cash generation, we have a distribution framework, which I think is attractive. We have a new distribution policy, one that now features buybacks for the discretionary or the supplementary element of our distributions. Also a growing of the base from 0.50 per share at 4% a year, so 0.52 for this year. With the discretionary or the supplementary element up to a third of adjusted operational cash flow. I think this is an investment opportunity that shows growth, shows decarbonization, and shows a good yield. I'm looking forward to taking your questions. We've got Felipe, Tore, Teresa, Jorgos, and Marcelo here to receive them. Thank you.
Dear participants, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone. As a courtesy to everyone on the call, we ask that you limit yourself to a maximum of two questions. The first question comes from line of Biraj Borkhataria from RBC Capital Markets. Please ask your question.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. First one on some of the gas sourcing issues you had in 2021. Could you talk about the current position right now for 2022, and if anything, kind of incremental costs are baked into your EBITDA guidance? The second question is on Brazil. Andy, you mentioned previously about the maintenance catch up once you can post-pandemic. Just wondering where you are now and how much of that catch up is left. Secondly, sort of related to that, for some of the early FPSOs in Brazil, should we be thinking about structurally lower utilization or some underlying declines coming through, or are we not there yet? Thank you.
Thanks, Biraj. I'll start with talking a bit about the gas sourcing, and I'll mention a few things on Brazil and pass over to Tore. On the gas sourcing issues, yes, we have suffered particularly in Q4. We've compensated by our own use, particularly in Sines. This has offset some of those issues. We are having cargoes rescheduled going forwards, but I think we're getting more adept at managing the overall balance of the supplies we get and the demands we have in our own use, but across Iberia. So this is still an ongoing challenge for us, but I think we're much better equipped to manage it going forward. When it comes to Brazil, clearly it's been a difficult couple of years, particularly with COVID and activities not going as fast as they normally would. I think we've got to remember these are declining fields. These are fields that now are more or less all drilled up. We've got some infill still. So this is a matter of can you keep pace with additional hookups, higher availabilities to compensate from some of the declining production rates. I think this is a situation that's not unusual. But I have to remind everyone on the call, we have Bacalhau that's going well and being built and will give us 25% production increase by 2025. So, Tori.
Thank you, Andy. Yes, no, so just confirming what you just said, the 2P at SM, we have to realize there's now 12 years since first production, so this field has now reached its peak. There is a slight decline on 2P at SM now. All the work that is now taking place is to try to reduce the decline rates. The decline rates are not big. Actually, we're speaking of 2P at SM below 3% per year, so which is quite astounding for a field that has already been in production for 12 years. But that is the fact, and as Andy said, only when we get Bacalhau towards the end of 2024, we could expect a sort of a significant uptick in production. We will have a positive contribution in 2023 from Coral, but that's a lot about either compensating for the decline that we see in the other fields. Maintenance is being carried out according to plan. We basically have more or less all the units now planned for maintenance this year. And you have to expect that there is a utilization factor of around about 85% when you're factoring in the usage of the FPSO. So that's for your guidance when it comes to the availability of the units. Thank you.
If I can just supplement, Q4 you saw around 125,000 barrels a day, but I think there were four units that went into planned shutdowns through the quarter. I think you've got to realise it was quite a high maintenance activity quarter. Just to reflect back on the energy management, we can see 100 million EBITDA swing from 2021 to 2022 because of regas costs, but also the sourcing issue. So Bill, I think we are going to get a much better year, much better set of results from our energy management team this year than we had in 2021.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Oswald Clint from Bernstein. Please ask your question.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you. So it's great to see the new competitive distribution framework. I think that's going to help a lot going forward. In that, I see you've stuck to the one-third of cash flow in terms of total cash return. It's interesting because some of your peers are also talking about in today's higher macro environment that a third or 30% might be suboptimal. So I just wanted to get a sense of if a third of adjusted CFO is a hard ceiling or could be a soft ceiling, could be raised if the environment turns out to be higher than you're expecting or the deleveraging comes in faster. And then secondly, as it relates to, some future developments here, I'd like to get a bit more flavor, color here on Northvolt deal. I think Georgios was saying he was very impressed by this deal when he saw it at the end of last year. He also spoke about it being the first step in a much larger battery chain for you. So I just wanted to get a sense of what is this total expected capital outlay for you, for NetToGalp, and what are the return expectations that you're currently contemplating here? I see Northvolt takes 50% of the offtake, but how do we secure the offtake for the rest, please? Thank you.
Hi, Oswald. How are you? All right. Look, on the distributions, I think I'm not going to guide anything, but it's a third of adjusted operating cash flow. Now, I think the exciting thing about Gulf is we see our operating cash flows grow. So that's, I think, how we're going to reward our shareholders, by growing our cash flows. And in the, you know, attractive macro like today, we're fully expecting that a third of adjusted OCF is going to be distributed. Northvolt, I'm going to ask Joris to say a few words in a second. But, yeah, I mean, I think we're very excited. It's a Northvolt, a very dynamic company. In combination with our industrial experience, this is, I think, a very good joint venture. You know, we talked about 700 million. We're 50%. We'll project finance it. You can, you know, work out some of the numbers. But, you know, we've just come off a call with Northvolt. I think the teams are working really well together. We've got good momentum behind the creation of that joint venture. So, Joris, you want to say a few words of your first impressions?
Sure. Thanks, Andy. Oswald, thank you for the question. Yeah, as Andy said, it's on a high end of 700 million investment, 50% project finance. We're now at the pre-feasibility study, so it's early to talk about returns. But in terms of offtake, one thing I can tell you is that as soon as we announced it in December, the phone started ringing. So it's not going to be, and there's reputable companies interested in our offtake. So we don't see an issue in securing offtake for this facility, particularly with what's happening around the globe with lithium hydroxide prices and demand.
Excellent. So you probably don't track the lithium hydroxide prices like you do the oil prices and gas prices, but the raw material spodumene has gone from about $400 a ton to $2,400 a ton, and the lithium hydroxide product from around, I think, $8,000 a ton to $40,000 a ton. So this is it's extraordinary what happens in the commodity market around lithium hydroxide, a market where European demand is going to grow tenfold for 2030. So this is a business that really excites us, and I think we're entering it exactly the right moment.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you for your answers.
Thank you. The next question comes to line of Masi Anabati from Bank of America. Please ask your question.
Hi, good afternoon, Owen. Thanks for taking my question. Maybe three small questions, please. First, you know, the discount to Brent, you know, your oil and gas realized price, you know, saying $10 below the discount to Brent. I was wondering myself, now that you can increase your gas price, gas relation price in Brazil, what kind of discount, you know, should we expect? Should we expect it to remain around $10 per barrel in the coming, let's say, quarter year? Or do you expect it, you know, to go back, you know, to the range that you were previously providing us, which was -$6, -$8 per barrel? Second question, on the refining. So clearly, you know, you are benefiting from the relatively high refining margin environment. From what I understand and please confirm, if I am not right, you clearly take advantage of the fact that your gas supply contract is oil-linked in your refining business. So this is kind of helping you against the relatively high gas price. But I also would like to understand, you know, CO2 costs are increasing quite a lot. How or where can I see that, you know, in the division? Is it impacting the cash costs or no? And finally, just on the shareholder remuneration distribution, so you've announced 150 million euros share buyback. Should we consider that you will buy roughly 69% of those 150 million euros in the market, given that Partublica and Amorim Energia you will directly buy them some shares, or should we expect Partublica and Amorim Energia to grow their shareholding interest in Gulf Energia, and then you realizing 150 million euros share buyback directly for the market? Thank you.
Thank you, Mehdi. So look, on the first point around the discount to Brent, and you asked the question, will we revise our guidance on the discount to Brent because we're now managing to market the gas in Brazil at a higher price than the regulated market with Petrobras? The answer to that is yes, we are. So we're going to go from an $8 to $10 discount in 2021 to $6 to $8 going forward because we're actually realizing higher gas prices as we market the gas as ourselves in Brazil. So that's really good news, of course. I will hand over to Tori on refining, perhaps also to reflect that actually one of the measures, and I talked about how we're going to reduce our own use of gas because of our sourcing restrictions, and one of the things we've done is we've been firing our hydrocracker off naphtha, which reduces our own gas consumption. But Tori, I don't know if you want to explain any more on that.
So, Eddie, thank you for your question. So what you do can expect is that our refining margin is actually including the impact of the CO2 cost. It is actually already in the baked in. We expect that to be in the order of $2 to $3 per barrel now, right now, with the high price closer to $3. Andy has said, we have had a cushion or have a cushion in the refinery with respect to gas prices, and actually in order to further optimize that, we have found that we can actually run very successfully now our hydrocracker really on naphtha, which is sort of, you know, helping us with the utilization of it. I actually see that we can even lift production to somewhat more than 100% of capacity. So that's how we are hedged on that. On, and handing back to you on buybacks.
Yeah, I think I understood the question. I mean, so we have no specific arrangements with Amarin NG or ParaPublica on the buyback arrangement. We're going to buy back 150 million euro in the market, on the open market. And we're going to do it in a very measured way, and I think less than the 20% or 25% every day of the market. So very, very, very slow over the year, starting after the AGM. We have to get approval from the AGM to cancel the shares. So we're only going to start the buyback after the AGM.
All right, thank you very much. Maybe just one follow-up, please. Can you tell us year-to-date what's your refining margin, please?
So we have started the year good on refining, Mehdi, and we actually are year-to-date somewhat above five. But it's early days, as you know, and it's too early to leverage more. But so our guidance remains 4 to 5. If I just may add one little thing on the differential side, Eddie, actually our performance on oil last year was actually better than the year before. So the qualities that we are delivering from Brazil is continuously being more appreciated in the market. Our energy management team is actually doing a very good job also now to optimize on the buying side. We see now a new buyer universe that is also opening up. So the big drag and the reason why it looks so, when on realized base, it looks so tough is because gas prices had a big impact on our 2021 result. But as of the 1st of January, we are handling these volumes ourselves and expect therefore a better realization also on the gas side. Thanks.
And just on the CO2, the CO2 prices are baked into that refinery margin, and operating costs are $2 a barrel. So we have a good margin in today's operating environment.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Joshua Stone from Barclays. Please ask your question.
Hi, good afternoon, and thanks for the question and also the new format. Much appreciated. So yeah, two questions, please. Firstly, just on the buybacks, what was it that convinced you to go down this route rather than the variable dividend? I mean, I know there was a long decision on that, but what was it that sort of clinched it for you? And then just I'm crystal clear on the practicalities of the program. So is the idea that every year at the full year results you announce the share buyback and then for the AGM and other, in other words, you won't get the regular updates every quarter. It will be sort of always announced at the full year results. And then my second question on the renewables capacity targets you put in, they look to be a bit lower than you put in at the CMD over the sort of 23-24 time period. So maybe you could talk about what's driving that reduction and also why your confidence of still hitting your medium-term targets there. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, John. So in terms of the why we moved to buybacks from cash, That was a result of actually very extensive consultation with shareholders. Since I came in, as you know, we had Capital Markets Day in June, and then, you know, I've been on the road talking to all the shareholders, and, you know, the majority were keen on buybacks. And so I think we spent our time, we consulted and came back with that as a decision. And we will calculate this, you know, on an annual basis, and we won't have to wait necessarily for the AGM to agree to cancel. I think we'll get an authorization to cancel a certain proportion of the shares over a period of time. But yeah, it will be based on year-end results to understand how much we'll buy back in the subsequent years or year. Renewables, I'm going to ask Joris to talk a little bit about what's happening in the Iberian market in renewables and particularly in solar.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks, Josh, for the question. So yeah, we have seen some slowdown in capacity deployment, absolutely. In 2022, we see 400 megawatts coming online, but we also see about 800 megawatts to reach ready to build. So that will be, let's say, that will fill our appetite for 2023. We have confidence on the portfolio that we have, and its executability for the interim target of 2025. But we're also going to look for other opportunities for early stage projects in order to develop more optionality for the execution.
If I can just add, I think it's Iberian-wide how long it's taking to get the permits from the authorities, and that's because they've got an enormous backlog. I think they've some like 330 gigawatts of proposals, and that actually is leading to a delay to get these projects going. So I think that's why we've seen this slowdown.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Sasikant Chilukuru from Morgan Stanley. Please ask your question.
Hi. Thanks for taking my questions. Two, please. Just coming back to the policy, the shareholder distribution policy, just wanted a quick clarification. Does the adjusted operating cash flow on which the distributions are tied to include the cash flow of the renewables on a pro forma basis? Could you talk about the capex and the financing costs, interest payments of the renewables business on a pro forma basis as well? And given that this business is equity accounted, could you provide some guidance on the dividends from the business in the near and then medium term? The second question was on the production outlook. Just wanted to check whether the production outlook that you have laid out includes the new plan of development for 2P and Iracema within the numbers as well.
Thank you, Tati. I'm going to ask Philippe to answer the first one and then Tori to answer the second one on production.
Hi, Sasi. The OCF that guides total distributions up to one-third is the consolidated OCF. So it will not catch the cash flows from renewables, it will cash the dividend stream that you'll see under the associates lines in the cash flow. So it is not the pro forma number that you have. So for the guidance we have for 2022 is 2 billion, and that is a consolidated number. So we have a lot more cash that is unconsolidated within that number. On the P&L, what you see, and P&L does not drive the guidance for dividends. On the P&L, what you see is the pro rata share of the net income of the solar companies. Thank you.
And thank you, Sasi. And then with respect to the POD, yes, our outlook is including the expected input from the or effects of the POD. But remember, this is... No, the POD has actually a short-term, a medium-term, and a long-term element. The short-term is very much infill wells. They will be drilled in the next few years, 2 years actually. And then we have more sort of medium-term that is then looking into what other sort of development opportunities are there of this field. And that is, of course, very much, you know, depending on the discussions that we will have with the authorities in Brazil. We see really exciting opportunity for harvesting much more out of this fantastic asset, and that is what we are going to continue to do with Chippy and Edison.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes to the line of Alessandro Pozzi from Mediobanca. Please ask your question.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my questions. The first one is a bit more broader. I think if I look at the share price over the last year, probably GAB has not benefited from the re-rating of the sector as some of your peers. And I was wondering, what do you think the market is missing, and would you be prepared to do something different?
Yeah, look, so I would agree with you that, you know, we have, our share price has gone sideways, and that's with the macro that is and our cash generation that we're delivering at the moment. I think that's and that's why actually buybacks are quite a good thing, because we think that the share price is undervalued. Look, I think the market, you know, I think we clearly were a company that was growing, had a very aggressive upstream production growth outlook. Clearly with the LNG in Mozambique being delayed, you know, we've had to moderate some of those production targets, but still, for any upstream business, as you all know, a 25% increase in 3 years' time is an enormous growth for an upstream business. So, you know, I think that will come as we get closer to that moment of startup. I think the market will really appreciate that. But what they, I don't think, have fully appreciated is the scale of our investment, the relative scale of our investment in the new energies businesses, and also the transformation of our commercial business. You know, these are going to deliver, you know, real significant cash flows, certainly in the second half of the decade. So I think the market will appreciate that. We're not going to change track. We have a very clear plan. You know, we clearly are enjoying the macro at the moment. We have a great upstream position. Our energy management business, as I alluded to, is I think still going to come into its own, particularly when we start receiving the LNG volumes from Venture LNG. So, you know, I think there are a number of catalysts that we have going forward. And I think once you do the numbers and you look out to 2025, you'll see that, you know, this is a growing business that is able to yield and decarbonize at the same time. So I don't think there's anything else that you really want from a business like ours to have those three things captured.
I was thinking maybe whether it's time to make more radical choices. And as you mentioned, you have a great green energy business, whether it's the time to take the opportunity of the oil price and start monetizing the upstream to accelerate the development of the green energy business.
I think you'd be surprised if we weren't continuing to look at options, you know, where the value of our assets were, and but you know, this is not a point to give any guidance on that. We have a very experienced gentleman around the table here that can point us to all sorts of opportunities in that renewable energy space, and we will look forward to continuing to deliver a good growth business that decarbonizes and yields. And we have quite an organic strategy today, but we continue to look at what inorganic opportunities there may be.
Okay, thank you. Maybe a second one. Maybe a second one on the dividend. Your progressive dividend, I believe you indicated 4% growth. How did you manage to come up with that number? And what are the inputs that went into the calculation, into the guidance for 4% growth in dividend? Thank you.
You know, I think we reflected on, you know, wanting to show that we've got a progressive dividend policy that shows that our base will grow in whatever macro environment, and recognizing as you buy back shares, we'll have more capacity in order to reward or increase the base. So this was a balance between understanding how many shares we were going to take out of circulation, how much we could grow the base, and what overall dividend kind of contribution that we can afford from our financial framework.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Alejandro Demetalis from Now Securities. Please ask your question.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my question. It's only one. On one of your slides of sources of uses of cash, you're showing a deleveraging for 2022 of somewhere in between 700 and 800 million euros, roughly. So the question is, with all those opportunities that you were mentioning, organic, inorganic, project financing on the Northvolt deal and so on, what is the kind of optimal leverage for a company like GAP going forward?
Thank you, Alejandro. I'm going to ask Philippe to answer that one.
Alejandro, so the target is 1x net debt to EBITDA. That's where we would like to be. And distributions will be sized in such a way that we're always at close to 1x net debt to EBITDA. Now, the deleverage that you see for 2022 in great part is also to make up for the increase in indebtedness that we have in 2021 with the cash margins related to derivatives. So you would expect us to compensate the miss in net debt in 2021, that should be covered in 2022. Now, the business plan is based on 75 Brent. So there could be, you know, OCF would go up with a higher Brent, so distributions would go up to one third of OCF. So that is quite mechanical. Thank you.
Okay, just as a follow-up, yeah? So when you get to the end of 2022 with those numbers that you're providing, you're going to be well below that one-time net debt to EBITDA, because also your EBITDA is going up, yeah?
Correct. That is the expectation, in which case, you know, it will be one-third of CSFO that will drive distributions, of OCF that will drive distributions.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Raphael Dubois from Société Générale. Please ask your question.
Hello. Yes, thank you very much for taking my questions. Two, please. The first one is a follow-up on the FPSO utilization rate. You mentioned earlier that we should aim for 85% utilization rate this year. What will you guide us for beyond 2022? Assuming, let's hope so, that the COVID situation does not impact us too much anymore and that you have caught up on your backlog of maintenance. That would be my first question. And then a second one on renewable power. Assuming the 150 euro per megawatt hour that you use in your short-term outlook and the deployment plan that you have, can we expect GALP to receive a dividend from this business? And if you could maybe tell us a bit more about the amount that we should be considering. Thank you very much.
Okay, on utilization. So we talked about 85%. As you know, these are aging FPSOs in this environment. We're not the operator, so I have to say that one of the things we're working very closely with Petrobras on how to improve it. We don't give any guidance on this, but I think these are clearly, there are a number of things going on in these FPSOs. One is, you know, we're having to maintain them and make sure that we keep the asset in good conditions. We have talked about issues with the risers. And that's an ongoing inspection and replacement program as seen fit. So all these things are multi-year things that go forward. So we're not in a position, I think, to give any guidance. But what we are doing is working very closely. Actually, we're bringing technology into Petrobras to help them with some of the inspection regimes. But I don't think we want to give any further guidance. I don't know if Tori can...
No, correct, Andy. That will not be. But 85... utilization rate, what we have guided you for 2022, I think it's also fair going forward that you use that as the key assumption base. We work, as Andy said, a lot with the operator. in order to find continuous opportunities to debottleneck and improve the efficiency of the unit. And we continue to see interesting infill opportunities, which is also then being being pursued in order to maximize the recovery of the field. Thanks.
So, Philly, are you going to talk a little bit about the perhaps the pro forma OCF we might see this year, and then or EBITDA, and then do we get any dividends?
So the mechanics are the following. So our projects are project financed. If cash flows are very strong, then we have cash sweep, so we can accelerate deleveraging of those projects, and there is a dividend being upstream to the shareholders. So yes, on the associates lines in the cash flow statement, there will be a dividend income. What you don't see is how quickly we're delivering the asset base. We also, as we do project finance, at the time when the projects are mostly de-risked, so we actually fund 100% of the equity up front. When project finance arrives, a lot of that money comes back to the shareholders, so a reimbursement of shareholder loans into the project companies. And that funding is used not for dividends, but to fund the next project. Thank you.
I see there. Can I ask a very quick other one?
Please.
Yes, thank you. Just maybe in the commercial business, we've seen your oil products volumes, they are not yet at 2019 level. Can you maybe give us some idea of how things are evolving year to date in this business? And could we eventually see oil product volumes back to 2019 level?
Trailer, do you want to answer some?
Yeah, thanks for the question. We do still expect 2022 to have volumes that are not at the levels of 2019. In the last weeks, so end of year and January do show encouraging growth in volumes in key B2B sectors, namely aviation, marine, and ground transportation. But not yet at the levels of 2019, and 2022 will still be a year of recovery in volumes.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Michele Della Vigna from Goldman Sachs. Please ask your question.
Thank you very much. Two questions, if I may. The first one relates to the most recent auction in Brazil, where other companies bid for a stake in Sépia and Atapu, and you decided effectively not to increase your stake there. And I was just wondering if you could perhaps comment on how you thought that auction went and some of your reasons behind it. And then secondly, if you could give us some ideas of how the progress is going with the Bacalhau development. I believe the operator Equinor was talking about it being 50% complete. And what are the key milestones from here? Thank you.
Thank you, Michele. So I'll answer on the Brazil bid round. You know, it was very tempting. It was a very attractive asset. We know Sépia very well. We're the only other a partner in that with Petrobras, so we understood the potential of this resource. It was a very competitive tender in the in the end, and I think well above the minimum bid rate. But I think our assessment was, we have a very clear strategy. We have a strategy where half our capital over a period of time is going towards these zero and low carbon sources of energies and products. And therefore, although attractive, in our balance of our strategy, we really felt that this was not a moment to deepen our position in that asset, but obviously to put the cash towards basically a very future-looking portfolio. Clearly it was not an easy decision for us to make, but I think one that reflects that we are very serious about our strategy going forward. If I can ask, because actually we have a strategy that actually has upstream growth, so already in the panel we have 50 years of 2P and 2C resources at the current production rate. So we have plenty in the hopper, and one of the big bets of that hopper is Bacalhau. And Tori, talk about how the progress is going.
Yes, thank you, Andy. So Bacalhau is actually progressing well. The next big milestone for this project is now to start the drilling and completion campaign in the second half of this year. That's going to be an important milestone for us in order to make sure that we have sufficient production and injection capacity available at the start of the field. As you know, or you might know, on Bacalhau there will be full gas injection. And from day one, that is not the field where we're exporting the gas, but actually injecting it straight back into the field. So to have the necessary injection capacity would also be important, therefore. So far, the project is developing well. Thanks.
I'll just give a supplement on the TOR Plus. Sepia clearly has an FPSO that's now online and performing really well. The next step there is another FPSO to be built. And actually, when you look at those cash flows going forward, you know, you don't get your money back until well into the next decade. So, you know, this is a real decision. Where is Galp going to be in the 2030s and 2040s? And was this a strategically a good move for us to make? Or is this the moment for us to be putting our capital elsewhere?
Thank you, Michele. The next question comes from the line of Ignacio Dominic from JB Capital. Please ask your question.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my questions. My first question is on Namibia. Following the recent discoveries of Grab 1, is there any bilaterals that you can do for Block Pelagis in Namibia? And maybe if you could give us some color on any potential drilling campaign, and if it proves to be successful, do you plan to develop this block, or would you be looking into potential divestments here? And my second question, and apologies to come back on gas realization prices. You mentioned before the opportunity to improve the differentials in Brazil following the gas market liberalization. So perhaps if you could elaborate on what levels of gas price network that they are achieving and what would be the tenure of this contract and what is the benchmark and maybe what is the percentage of the gas you produce which is being impacted. Thank you.
Ignacio, I think I got the second question, and but let's go to Namibia first. And we're very excited about what's going on around our Pelagis 3 block, but Tori perhaps can give it a bit of colour to that.
Thank you, Andy, and thank you, Ignacio, for the question. Yes, we are really, of course, excited. This has been a position that we've been holding for a while. We have had big faith in Namibia and actually see some very interesting structures. The Graff well and the Venus well is next door neighbours, and for us, this is taking away one of the key risks that was actually a working petroleum system. This fact that these discoveries are made is a very good proof for that the petroleum system is working. And it's actually leading us, as we speak, to upgrade our probability of success quite significantly on these two fields. So yes, I can tell you that there's a lot of happy faces in our exploration department these days. And as you perhaps noticed from my presentation, we have also two other very interesting shots in the exploration magazine this year. We are drilling, as we speak, in the Campos Basin in Brazil, the so-called Bob prospect. And later this year, we'll also be drilling in Santo Tomé and Príncipe on something that we actually think is quite interesting. Both of them with quite significant Gulf positions. In Santo Tomé and Príncipe, we actually hold 45%. And in Namibia, we actually have 80%. Of Pelagis. So it's an interesting position to have right now. Thanks.
I think you were talking about the gas contracts we have in Brazil. Actually, we've done six different deals already, and we're only 7 weeks into the year. And we're marketing our own gas. We're not committing at all. We're only committing between a third and two-thirds of our gas production into those markets. But we're also marketing on behalf of others. And we're getting, as you might imagine, we're getting, really attractive, well, much more attractive than the past gas prices. There are seven companies marketing gas in Brazil, and we're one of them, and we're, I think, very proud that we've set up that capability. And I think, you know, you will see those numbers coming to the bottom line, so through the upstream results. But I don't want to reveal really the length of those contracts or the price lines. But what I can say is, you know, this is a reasonable amount of cash that we're generating from these new contracts. Thank you.
Very clear. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Pedro Alves from Caixa Bank. Please ask your question.
Hi, good afternoon. My question is on renewables. Just a quick refresh on what should we expect from GALP in terms of inorganic movements. We have seen last week the news that ACS is allegedly seeking a buyer for ZeroE, the renewable subsidiary where you hold a 75% stake. So could you please comment on this, on your intentions to this company? And also in terms of, on the acquisition side, should we assume that your inorganic moves will be mostly early stage portfolios, like you mentioned, or perhaps more aggressively to scale up your portfolio? Would you perhaps consider merging, for instance, this JV with ACS with other Spanish listed players? Could this be a possibility for M&A, or would you rather do a corporate move outside Iberia? Thank you.
Thank you, Pedro. Let me start that, and then I'll hand over to Joris. I think the first thing to say, we have 4.7 gigawatts now in our funnel. And, you know, we've got a line of sight to build out that capacity. And as you know, we've added Brazil this year to that portfolio, but also deepened also in Iberia. Now, we get into these projects early, so we can get the most, you know, the biggest return from those projects. You know, clearly we will continue to look at inorganic, but we're not giving any kind of guidance on that today. I have to say, I think we've got a strong portfolio and we've got one that gives us certain visibility to our 2025 target. I don't know, you want to add to that? I mean, we do continue to look, and we will look to rotate our own assets, as we've said, in order to maximize the equity value. But also perhaps mention a little bit about ACS and ZeroE and what do we understand from that announcement.
Thanks, Andy. So on the organic versus inorganic, we are growing and, you know, buying early stage portfolios. I mean, I consider that mostly organic. So this is something that we will selectively continue to do, as I was saying before, because it adds optionality to our deployment through the years. On ACS, we don't want to comment on announcements of others, but we don't see any let's say impact on our portfolio and our relationship with them.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes to the line of Mats Loftin from JP Morgan. Please ask the question.
Great. Thanks for taking the questions. Two follow-ups, if I could please. First, just on capital allocation, it sort of felt to me, based on the sort of the earlier answers around how GALP looked at the Brazil bid round in recent months, that there was perhaps sort of some degree of constraint in terms of how that was assessed from a capital allocation perspective, given the degree of allocation that you're putting towards the low carbon piece over the medium term. So I wonder if you could talk a bit about how you think about the company's ability to be agile or nimble around capital allocation over the medium term, and particularly if oil and gas prices and the upcycle around that sustains over the medium term, the extent to which you can respond to that. And then secondly, we're obviously seeing sort of signs in some segments of cost inflation re-emerging in the industry in recent months. Bacalhau is obviously a very important project for the medium term for GALP. Can you just talk about sort of post the FID, not just the sort of the drilling and completion side, but the extent to which the contracting is locked in around that project for the next couple of years? Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. And so, you know, can I just, to the point of agility, I think what we want to do is keep our powder dry. Let's say we've got 50 years of 2P and 2C resources at current production rates. We're growing our upstream production. We're committing quite a lot of capital towards that. We didn't see any reason to spend quite a bit of money on getting more resources in that funnel that, you know, we're not even deliver cash flows or get our money back until well into the 2030s. And okay, the price is high today, but we can't predict what the prices are going to be at the end of this decade. So I think that that was really us signaling that, yeah, Galp is a company that is determined to decarbonize its portfolio over time. We have to make some hard choices. And we made a hard choice so that we could actually, you know, reserve, I say, the firepower for things that are lower carbon in due course. Now, cost inflation on Bacalhau, I think, sorry, perhaps an update on how we see costs in the Bacalhau project.
Thank you, Andy. And if I may just add to the first, Andy, it's also that, you know, we have a very, very competitive upstream portfolio. You know, remember our break even is actually below $25 per barrel. So anything that wants to get in has to be really damn good. So there's also a lot of competition to get into the Gulf portfolio. When it comes to Bacalhau, we believe that Bacalhau is actually in a very good position. We have the EPCs locked in, and therefore we have very limited exposure versus cost inflation on Bacalhau, which is, of course, is a very, very important deal for us. And the same goes both for the FPSO and also for the SURF contract. So as we see it as of today, we are in a quite good and robust situation when it comes to Bacalhau. Thank you.
Super. Thanks, James.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Pablo Cuadrado from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please ask your question.
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. Just two quick questions on my side. The first one is related to the production cost on upstream. It has declined by roughly $0.2 year on year. I was wondering whether you can tell us how you are expecting that to move in the next, for this year particularly, but also probably if you are able to give a little bit a vision going forward and even when Bacalhau starts, that would be great. And the second question, I'm sorry for coming back to this, is on operational cash flow. And I want to understand the guidance for this year, the $2 billion. Is that a reported figure, i.e. that's a figure that excludes any kind of working capital inflow to be recovered from the losses that you have had in 2021? Because I might recall that you have been highlighting that part of the working capital impact should be recovered as soon as the gas contracts are finally delivered on physical terms. So I wanted to understand if that $2 billion basically assumes any work capital inflow or not.
Thank you, Pablo. Can I ask Tori to talk a bit about the production cost guidance and Philippe on the OCF guidance?
Thank you, Andy, and thank you, Pablo. When it comes to production costs, actually our production cost in the fourth quarter was unusually good. There's a one-off effect in the fourth quarter that is related to the fact that we're transferring assets from our Dutch BV to Brazil. That helped it. So going forward, where we are guiding you is that we continue to say that you should expect it to be below $3 per barrel. That is the guidance we have, and when Bacalhau comes, that will, you know, clearly also sustain these levels. So continued very competitive OPEX from the side of our Brazilian business. Thanks.
Pablo, the best way is to go to our slide 29 on sources and uses of cash. You'll see the $2 billion is the clean OCF, and we're guiding now for OCF because it is clean. So we're taking out every variation in one-offs, working capital, inventory effects. So $2 billion is a clean number. Then yes, on top of that, there will be a significant cash inflow from the 2021 fiscal year. But that will not drive, so only OCF will drive the distribution policy. Thank you.
Thank you, Pablo. And our final question comes from the line of Mehdi Ennebati from Bank of America. Please ask your question.
Hi. Thanks for taking again my question. A few follow-up questions. First, Andy, can you please make sure I understood well. You said earlier regarding the share buyback that you will realize through the market, that you will do it slowly, but you also said that it will be 20 to 25% of the daily traded volume. Did I understand well or no? No, first question. Second question, so you have been impacted by a €605 million working capital outflow due to gas derivatives in 2021. And how much are you confident? How are you confident that you will get back the €605 million in 2022? Have you been approached by some of your customers telling you we can't pay it because it's too expensive, because we can't pay for the gas, we want to renegotiate the gas deal, etc., because it's too expensive, or do you consider that that the demand is pretty nice and you will get back, you know, your €605 million? And finally, so you commented quite a lot regarding your utilization rate of 85% for 2022, but I probably missed it. What was the average utilization rate in 2021? Thank you.
So, Mehdi, let me start with the first. I don't think we caught the last question, but firstly on the buybacks, let me, we are actually looking at about €1 million a day, which will be about 3 to 4%. So, you know, well below what I mentioned before. So only 3 to 4% of share acquisitions in the market on a daily basis. Philippe, can you talk a bit about the working capital outflows?
Yes, maybe. So we're highly confident that we're getting the money from the clients throughout the year. And if I understood your question, so I'm putting in an extreme scenario. If clients were to stop buying the gas from us, then we could place the gas in the spot market. So financially, this is not going to be a risk for Galp in 2022.
Perfect. Thank you very much. And I just,
can you ask?
Yes, I just.
Can you ask your third question?
Yeah. Just you said that you know your upstream or your FPSO utilization rate in Brazil should be around 85% in 2022. Can you please remind me what was your FPSO utilization rate in Brazil in 2021? Thank you.
Sorry, can you help us with that?
So the effective rate for last year was in that order. It was actually around 83%, Mehdi. So that's where we expected to come up somewhat, but 85% is what we are guiding you for next year. Thanks.
Excellent.
Thank you. We have some extra questions to take. The next question comes from line of Ignacio Dominic from UB Capital. Please ask your question.
Hi, thank you for taking my last question. Regarding TPL reserve, you mentioned before at 11%. However, 2P plus 2C reserves are down 8% year on year. So I was just wondering why these reserves have dropped. And maybe if you could tell us what would be the recovery factor assumed at 2P last month. Thank you.
Ignacio, can you please repeat your question, please?
Yes. You mentioned 2P oil reserves were up 11%. However, 2P plus 2C have dropped 8% year on year. So I was wondering why reserves have dropped. And then my second question would be on the current recovery factor assumed at TPRFMA.
Okay, I think, sorry, the question is about the reserves. And the adjustment of the reserves and the recovery factor we're expecting from 2P Oceana.
We are not publishing in details reserves and resources of what we have been the changes with the single the different fields. We do that on a portfolio basis. But as you correctly pointed out, so the oil reserve 2P has increased in last with 16% last year. There was a decline on the natural gas reserves. That is really due to the fact that there is we have the Guardian of Norton that is doing the auditing of our reserves. The fact that we now have a gas contract in place in Brazil requires us then to book the reserves according to what the gas sales contracts are stipulating, and that led to a reduction in on the reserve side. So overall, the 2P increased in Gulf for last year with 2% versus when you looked on gas and oil in totality. When it comes to recovery factor on 2P, I'm not 100% sure what I got your question. We continue to work on improving the recovery factor on 2P, and that is a very important reason for this new plan of operation and the development that was delivered by the end of last year, which actually sort of really targets to continue to improve it. Short term by more infill wells, longer term by looking into further development on the field, and even more than that, also looking potentially field life extension. That is now discussions that we have with the authorities in Brazil. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Henry Pacheco from UBS. Please ask your question.
Yes, everyone. Thank you for the update. So a couple of quick ones for me on the CNS HVO project. So targeting FID in 2023. You're still looking at startup in 2025. And can you comment on the progress you're making on the West feedstock sourcing strategy? Thank you.
Sorry, can you help us with that one?
Thank you, Henry, for your question. Yes, we are very excited about this HVO advanced biofuels product that we are now currently doing the feasibility studies for in as we speak. This is going to be one of the elements in our portfolio to turn Sines from a gray refinery into a green energy park. Waste feedstock sourcing is going to be a key element, and we are actually, as we speak, in direct negotiations with partners that we are looking to join into this product to make sure that we do the sourcing in the most optimal way. I cannot disclose more of this at this stage, but take it for granted that feedstock sourcing is an important part of in this project. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. And the final question comes from the line of Michael Schwartz from Jefferies. Please ask your question. Michael, your line is open.
Thank you. I was wondering, what are the main fields or FPSOs in Brazil that are in decline, and which ones are still at plateau? And then following on that, what is the average decline rate across your business in Brazil? And then I had a second question. In terms of your refining margin, what is included in terms of energy costs? And you have your guidance for $2 per BOE for refining cash costs in 2022. Could you break down the components of that? And do you still have a long-term target of $1.07? For BOE for refining cash flow? Thank you.
So if I can first, I'll just look, firstly, as you might imagine, our Brazil assets are essentially showing, you know, roughly flat production going forward because we're wrapping up a few fields like Sepia and the Yara fields, and clearly with Tupi-Niracema we're seeing some declines. So, you know, overall, this is a mixture of some residual ramp-ups, some infill drilling, and some decline, keeping overall flat. So, you know, I don't really want to get into the details of each individual field, but, you know, we see our Brazil assets delivering, as I say, flat until Bacalhau comes online when we see the 25% increase. I think anything to add on refinery margin for us?
No, I think we have said what we wanted. We are not wanting to discuss the details and how our OPEX is composed, Miguel. That's not the sort of the level that we are disclosing at this level. However, what you can expect is that the $2 per barrel is a robust target. We are working, of course, to continue to optimize it, but as Andy said in his opening remarks, we did have operational challenges at the refinery last year. So it's a very important part of our recovery is to make sure that we are now doing the maintenance That it was long overdue in the refinery, and that's why we are looking for $2 to be a very robust guidance for you going forward as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions. I would like to hand the conference over to Mr. Atello Ruivo for closing remarks.
Can I just one, because some maybe people confused on what I said about the buybacks. And so the 20-25%, you have to be below that for the safe harbor regulations. So that's why I mentioned that number. But the actual number is between 3 or 4%. So well below where the regulations would stipulate. So I just wanted to make sure you all were clear about that. Atello.
Thank you for clarifying, Andy. I think this ends the session for today. Thank you for participating. Hope to see you all soon. Bye-bye.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect. Have a nice day.